This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with David Cole. We're going to be discussing malls in L.A., primarily in the era of the 1980s. Great having you back on, David.
Pleasure to be here, and it's a very interesting topic for discussion, especially for people who are locals like me who remember a lot of this stuff.
And I'm also joined here with a newcomer to L.A., Matthew Pegas.
Great to be here as always, Robert. Thank you.
So, David, you're significantly older than I am, but
I got to do something about this gray. I'm sorry, Robert. The fucking gray in my hair. It's all I see anymore in pictures of myself. And you know, I'm only 50. I shouldn't be looking, you know, that bad.
Yes. So, I mean, I basically grew up in the 90s. So, I was born in 85. So, I remember when the malls in the 90s and even into the early 2000s still had a very 80s aesthetic.
Oh, sure. Well, the very, very first outdoor mall in L.A. was Century City, which has been around since the 60s. If anybody's ever seen the movie Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, that was the one of 1972, and that was the one set in the future city where we have now domesticated the apes. Fascinating premise. Dogs and cats die from a plague, so we just jump to apes. It's like there's nothing, we don't try any middle ground for pets. It's like, well, dogs and cats are dead. Hey, you know what? Well, let's do apes. You'd think maybe, you know, they try maybe ferrets or raccoons or something in between there. So Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is set in a future America where apes are domesticated, and there's Ape City, which is where the ape headquarters, the training and beating and torturing of rogue apes goes on. So Ape City was shot at the Century City Outdoor Mall, and it did look very futuristic for a 1972 audience. It had a look to it that was very stylized, and it fit right in as a location for a movie like that. And anyone who is local and they watch that film, they'll recognize all the locations there. So that was our first mall of any real kind. And then the first indoor mall opened in the 70s, and that was the Fox Hills Mall in the kind of the area around Fox Hills, near Culver City and Westchester, kind of right in between there. And that was a wonder. We had never had an indoor mall before. You had to go down to Orange County or Torrance, out to Torrance, to see one. So having one right in L.A., that was really fascinating for all of us who at that time were in elementary school. And boy, here was an indoor mall filled with all kinds of stores and restaurants. And that was very new to us.
Yeah, I remember the original Century City. And yeah, a really cool kind of a 60s futuristic aesthetic. And they're completely ruining all these places. There was a massive renovation recently. I mean, there's been a number of renovations. And even, I mean, I do remember as a kid in the 90s, there was this food court area and then the older theaters. But I'm not sure, that may have been that looks like that may have been an add-on in the 80s, but that's all gone now.
Well, yeah, what happens is Westfield buys these places and injects billions of dollars in capital in them. They remade Fox Hills Mall. They made it gigantic. They expanded it, put in a Best Buy and a Target, and a bunch of new restaurants, and completely made it unrecognizable on the inside. They could do that with the Fox Hills Mall because there was still land around it that could be used for additional space. Then they bought Century City, and it's been 2 years they've been working on that, and I went to see it for the first time on my birthday a couple of weeks ago because I hadn't been there since the renovations officially ended, and I can't recognize it at all. It looks like something from Dubai. It looks like one of those mega billion-dollar malls from a country like Dubai where people just go and blow millions on nothing for no reason. Every store is fancy. There is almost no practical stores left. No stores where you can just go and buy something that you might actually need in life. Everything is... There's a Tesla store in the mall. And so it's all like that. It's very fancy clothing stores, very fancy jewelry stores, designer luggage and handbag, gyms. They've got a couple of gyms. They've got a freaking boxing ring for white people to like go and work out in the boxing ring at the mall, and think that they're somehow like back in the Bowery in New York in the '30s. And then the restaurants, I haven't even tried all the new ones yet. There are so many new restaurants there, and they've double and triple decked everything on the mall. So it is technically still an outdoor mall, but because there's three levels to it, you don't really get too much of an outdoor vibe when you're on the first level because there's stuff above you. But it looks like they put the entire wealth of your average nation in there. I mean, the amount of money they must have spent on this thing, it's astounding.
Yeah, because that area around Century City, Beverly Hills, Holmby Hills, Bel Air, I mean, that's always been one of the wealthiest areas, but you think that area has gotten even a lot more opulent with the concentration of wealth?
Yeah, and also, I think we didn't maybe understand this 20 years ago, but now, when you look around, because there's also been all these new office buildings that have gone up in the last 15 years, 20 years, it is now kind of like Manhattan. It's the center of a lot of financial institutions. They have their own buildings there, and it's also the center of a lot of the corporate offices of a lot of entertainment companies like 20th Century Fox and ABC. So at lunchtime, you have all of these massive, very wealth-filled skyscrapers, and people want to come down. They want to eat somewhere. So part of the smart thing that Westfield did in putting in so many restaurants is made it much more attractive to these executives and other lower-level workers who get their lunch break and they want to go someplace interesting.
Yeah, and I've kind of mixed feelings about the transformation of Century City, because a lot of people in the past kind of described Century City as a vertical suburb in the sense that it had high-rise buildings, but it was very auto-oriented. And I think it's a good thing that they're trying to become more urban and pedestrian friendly. And I know there's a planned subway station, which who knows when that will open. It could be like 20 years from now, but I think that's a good thing. But aesthetically, I do have a preference for the kind of 60s to 70s retrofuturism. Some of the newer stuff is a little bit bland, and it doesn't have that same charm. And not just the Century City Mall. I remember there was this underground mall where the Schubert Theater used to be.
Of course.
That place was really fascinating. But I guess underground malls aren't that popular in Southern California.
That was back when the ABC headquarters were right there. The Schubert was on one side, and then on the other side you had the corporate headquarters of ABC. So you had people coming out at lunchtime, and it was very convenient for them. And then people staying at the Century Plaza across the street, they could go under Avenue of the Stars to that underground mall, and it had a great feel, very kind of East Coast feel, where you have a lot more stuff underground. But that land where the Schubert was, a bunch of people who do this for a living, they were like, we got to develop this. The Schubert was not making any money, unfortunately, and neither were the movie theaters that were across from it. And the restaurants had all become very old and passé. So the thing that's there now, this very big glass structure with a hole in the middle, one of those artistic flourishes.
Oh, you know what? I don't know if you remember this, Matt, but that place was featured in Californication, the new one.
The underground mall?
No, the new one. I forget what it's called. The one that replaced it. It was the scene where they go to meet that producer, Stu.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that is, that building now is the headquarters of almost every high-powered talent agency and a lot of entertainment companies, and they built a park outside behind it with a couple of restaurants in it. So they've made it, it reflects the wealth of that area and the wealth of the people who work there. Interesting thing, though, Robert, that I did notice with Century City Mall, with all of the innovations and all of the improvements, and the food court. There is a food court that opened up in like the early 2000s, and it supplanted the old food court, which was kind of ordinary and run down. That food court that's been there since maybe about 2004, 2005, the food court's still there. They didn't really change it except for one interesting feature. They took away the Hasidic Jew hand washing station.
Huh.
This is a feature that had been there since that renovation in the early 2000s, and some of your listeners who might not know, Orthodox Jews cannot take anything that is considered holy into a bathroom. A bathroom is considered a filthy place, and so anything that has either the name or the image of God cannot be taken in there. Now, because money has "In God We Trust" on it, all money is therefore by definition holy, because Hasidic Jews can't even say or spell the word God. They do G-D. It's that holy to them. So you can't take money into a bathroom. And so when an area is heavily Hasidic, most restaurants, as a courtesy, will put a hand washing station outside the bathroom, so that if all you need to do is wash your hands or have your kids wash their hands, you don't have to worry about where am I going to put my wallet while I go in the bathroom. And I was really surprised to see that's gone. And I don't know whether that has to do with that it's no longer a place of interest to the Hasidics. I also noticed more people than normal wearing hijabs and burqas, so maybe there is a lot of Arab money in the new structure, and so for whatever reason, the Hasidic hand washing station was gone.
Yeah, I've noticed the kind of same demographic transformation. So historically, that whole area has been heavily Jewish, but in the last 10 years, I've noticed a massive increase in Muslims and women in hijab. So I don't know if it's immigration or they're just like rich Saudi tourists.
Yeah, I can't really say either, but it was something that really stood out to me, that of all the things, because it wasn't taking up any space. It wasn't like they needed that space for something, but they were making some type of a statement by removing it. And now, the current wrinkle that Westfield is up to is they are demolishing the West Side Pavilion, which would have been... That's a mall that opened in 85. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that one, Robert.
Yeah, I grew up in basically pretty near that area, so mm-hmm. I remember going there a lot as a kid in the 90s. And originally, so it was designed and opened in 1985, the same year I was born. Designed by the architect John Jarday, who also he did the Universal City Walk, which opened in the early 90s in a lot of casinos in Vegas, like the Bellagio and the Wynn. And the very original West Side Pavilion, if you want to get an idea what it looks like. You can see it on Tom Petty's video, Free Falling. But it's kind of this faux Parisian theme, and there's all these cool geometrical shapes like pyramids and different bright colors. Then they remodeled it around the year 2000, and it became more bland, but there's still some remnants of the original aesthetic. So Matt and I went there to film, and we filmed from the rooftop of the, where you go in under the pyramid, and there's that glass atrium, and it looks down to the elevators. So who knows what they'll do with the current renovation.
Yeah. We'll have to get that footage up in some capacity at some point, because it is a really interesting aesthetically. It's very interesting aesthetically, that mall. Very, very 80s.
What they're planning to do with it is turn it into offices. And I went there last week. Nothing is open. Basically, there was a coffee bean kiosk that was open and maybe five stores. Everything else was closed up. The Nordstrom is completely gone. It's just boarded up. They've put in a little pathway so that you can still get to that bridge across part with the theaters, the movie theaters. But and the May Company, the Robinsons May, I should say, or Macy's now. The Macy's is completely closed, and they're just bringing it down. They're going to turn it into an office complex with a little like retail food area, but it's no longer really going to be a mall anymore.
Yeah, Robin and I went on a Sunday morning, which you'd think there'd be some people shopping, but it felt like we were the only people in the entire complex.
Yeah, the stores have known for about a year that their lease would be up. So when I had the Porn Girl here, we would shop there a lot because every store was having sales, because they all knew that by the end of this year they'd have to be out. It was a very strange feeling walking through it as abandoned as it is now, with just nothing at all in there. And the only thing I could think of about why, out of all the malls, why Westfield is demolishing this one instead of renovating it again, my best guess would be that there's no available land around it, so you can't expand outward. The shape of the pavilion has always been the least interesting of all those malls. It is just a rectangular building. There's no corners and no turns. It's not like an L shape like a lot of malls are. So there's not that much you can do with it except build up. But you can't build out, and you can't expand it any more than it is. So I guess Westfield figured it already has the footprint is what an office building should be, just a big rectangle. So I guess they figured this was the best way to go with this one.
Yeah, I mean, even if they do turn it into offices, I mean, it would be nice if they could keep some of the original aesthetics, such as the glass atrium on the top, but they're probably, I haven't seen renderings, but they'll probably just demolish it all and completely transform it. I do remember the kind of transformation, because I remember there was this period, maybe in the 90s or even into the early 2000s, where Westside Pavilion was fairly upscale, and then I think probably due to competition from Century City and Third Street Promenade, it became a lot more run down and catered to a more working class clientele. So I remember that transformation, but at some point it was fairly upscale. So I do remember it as a kid growing in the 90s when it had the 80s aesthetic. Do you remember going to Westside Pavilion even in the 80s?
Well, what was there when I was a kid was a May Company building that would eventually become Robinson's May, that would eventually get bought out by Macy's. So what there was when I was a kid was one department store, not as part of a mall or anything, just one department store freestanding. Behind the May Company was a little area with a garden and a statue of St. Francis of Assisi, and birds it was like in a little cage with a little creek, and birds would come in and they'd sit on his shoulder. And I was always fascinated by that. And then next to that was an area with some regular retail stores, but not as part of a mall, just on Pico. There was a clothing store for kids, which is where I used to get, my mom would get my clothes. And then next to that was the Pickwood Movie Theater. The Pickwood Movie Theater was not a Cineplex. It had one giant screen. And I saw tons and tons of movies there when I was, like, in the early 80s, because if you wanted to go see, like, Poltergeist, for example, when that came out, and that was a big movie you wanted to see on a big screen because it was all scary lights and noises and stuff. So the Pickwood Theater was a place where I, and like, some of my earliest dates that I went on in 84 and early 85, I went to that theater because it was close to my house, and it was such a great experience because of the size of the screen. So the West Side Pavilion, basically they just took the May Company building and built the West Side Pavilion around it and got rid of the movie theater, got rid of those little retail stores. And then sometime in the 90s, they put on that addition across the street, across Westwood Boulevard.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was later transformed into the current movie theater, but there was another outdoor section that was built in the early 90s.
Yeah, and it had a Tony Roma's there, and it was the only Tony Roma's in the area, so I used to go there a lot. And then I had a girlfriend at the time who was a waitress there at that Tony Roma's. But it was like an outdoor plaza. It just was, the middle was all outdoors, and then there were stores kind of ringing it around, and they transformed it into the movie theater thing that it is now. But in fact, one of my favorite memories there, when they first built that outdoor addition, and I think I was going to the Tony Roma's one day. Now, this would have been in the early 90s. Roseanne Barr was a huge star. At that point, Roseanne was on top of her game, number one TV show and movies. They were giving her movie deals. So she had just had a baby, and it was a big deal. Everybody was talking about, oh, Roseanne's had a baby. I think she had other kids, but like, this is her first baby since being a star. And I'm on the second level of that, the mall edition, with my girlfriend, and we just see down on the first level, we're looking down from the balcony, there's Roseanne holding her baby, which is very young, practically newborn, and she's holding her baby, and she is ringed on all sides by these dudes in black who look like Secret Service guys. Some celebrities like to hide their security personnel to make them just look like average buds. Some people, though, like the look of being seen with a squad of obvious security guys. So you had these guys with earpieces, seven or eight of them, just forming a ring around her as she walked through the mall. I thought, my God, that's as conspicuous as I have ever seen a celebrity be. One of the things that was a landmark, kind of seismic event in L.A. shopping culture was the death of Westwood Village in the late 80s. The Westwood Village area, which is right by UCLA, and it's like a little village that used to be extremely popular for kids on the weekend. When I was a teenager, that's kind of where you went. You didn't really hang out at the West Side Pavilion at night. That's where your friends had their day jobs or their weekend jobs or whatever, working at the food court. But when you wanted to go out and party, you went to Westwood Village, and it was so busy and so crowded around 83, 84, 85, that they would close it off to cars and make it foot traffic only. The main reason they did that was when we had the Olympics in 84, and many of the events were at UCLA in their sports facilities. Westwood Village was never more crowded than the summer of 84 because of all the people who came out for the Olympics. And in the middle of it all, on a crowded Friday or Saturday night, this black dude who thought the Beatles had stolen all their music from him decided to ram people on a sidewalk in his car. So he just rammed his car into a sidewalk full of people, I think killed either two or three of them. They took him into custody. He was mentally just completely as insane as possible. So after that, they started closing it to car traffic on the weekends. And it was this huge location for kids, for teenagers. There were bars that a lot of my friends with fake IDs would be able to sneak into, and lots of really hip, trendy clothing places, and movie theaters, tons of movie theaters, and lots of fast food places. But in 89, something happened there. The Westwood Village survived the car ramming. People just realized that's what it is. It was the Olympics, crazy guy. They didn't hold it against the village. People kept coming. But by the late 80s, Westwood Village had started to attract a lot of black gangs. And in 89, two of these gangs got into a shooting fight in the middle of the crowded shopping streets, and a Japanese tourist got shot in the head, and she died. I think she was only like 21. At that point, people stopped wanting to go to Westwood after that, and the merchants panicked because they started to see a drop-off in the crowd. So the merchants asked the police, and also the UCLA campus police, asked them to just crack down on everything. Write tickets for everything. Make sure that these gangs never come back. Make sure nobody who might be up to any no good ever comes back. And the cops started doing that. And you would get arrested. You'd get a citation for spitting on the sidewalk. That only drove people away even more. That corresponded exactly to when the Third Street Promenade became hip and trendy. People started going to the promenade instead of Westwood.
The Third Street Promenade. That opened around, was it like 1990?
Well, the mall, the indoor mall part, but that outdoor promenade was there since before I was born. However, it was not what it is today. When I was a kid in the 70s, there was a Newberry's and a Sears. It was
I've seen photographs of the old there was an older pedestrian mall, but it looked totally different.
Oh, yeah.
The one that exists today, I think, was built in the early 90s.
Yes, because as people, after 89, as people started to move away from Westwood, the developers at the promenade, like, well, now we've got an opening because we can offer the same thing, an outdoor walking location without the trouble of cars driving through it, and we're by the beach. And we've got the pier nearby with the little amusement park on it. So the promenade became where all of those Westwood Village crowds went to. And Westwood Village became incredibly depressed. There was a period where no more than half of the stores even had anything in them. It has battled back over the years, but the promenade got a place of just a superior position at that point as the outdoor walking mall.
Now outdoor malls that's become like a huge trend. So when you have these newer malls like the Grove and the Americana on brand, which are more like theme parks, with the Third Street Promenade, it is more interconnected to the urban landscape, but indoor malls are definitely going out of style.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Grove was such a success. An overwhelming success. And there were a lot of people who fought against the Grove because they thought it would destroy the historical nature of the old farmers market, which was a place long before I was born, and my grandma used to take me there, where all the old Fairfax Jews hung out. And you could get deli food and just to go to all the various peddlers and their various kiosks. So the Grove had to make an allowance for that. The Grove was only allowed to be created by promising that they would retain the old farmers market. But once the Grove opened with that Disneyland Main Street feel, the Vegas-style dancing fountain, and the trolley that really doesn't go anywhere. It's just purely, the trolley just goes from one end of the mall to the other. There's really no reason to take it because you can just walk there. But it just had this feel of Main Street Disneyland, and people loved it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Again, I'm a newcomer to LA, and all the malls that seem the most popular to me are the Grove and the Americana at Brea. All of them are made by this company, Caruso Affiliated. So it's kind of remarkable to me that really over the past 20 years, it's those two malls, also the Calabasas Commons, that it really seems like just the span of like 20 years, a lot of those locations have just totally become very dominant in the shopping complex scene.
Well, most of Caruso's big projects were in the early 2000s, so they're still fairly popular. But as far as new complexes go, I don't know if there's that many new proposals. I think the big thing now is there's like been the recent renovation of places like Century City, but there's more. Let's see. I mean, there is. I guess the only example of like a newer proposed mall I can think of is in downtown LA. They're proposing this upscale high-rise shopping complex across the street from Staples Center, which reminds me of a lot of the newer stuff getting built in Vegas, like the. What's the whole place called? Is it the whole new complex in Vegas? I think it's like Crystals or City Center.
Oh gosh, yes, the that's the first place I ever saw spiral staircase escalators. I didn't even know that you could do that. But yeah, I haven't been to Vegas in 2 years now. But yeah, that I know the place you're talking about. Very, very upscale, hugely upscale.
So yeah, they are building something in downtown LA that kind of reminds me of that. But with Caruso's projects, they're still popular, but I don't think they represent like the current era. They're starting to become kind of dated themselves. They represent like the first decade of the 2000s.
Interesting.
Yeah, and by the way, Matt, since you had mentioned Body Double, the movie Body Double.
Yes.
You can actually get a trip down memory lane two ways in that film, because on the one hand you'll see the Rodeo Collection at its prime, and we all know that scene where in the glass elevator where Scully has the panic attack and the Indian comes in, and then he follows the girl down to the parking garage, and that was all just every part of that was shot at the Rodeo Collection. But also, you can get a glimpse of what the Grove looked like before it was the Grove, when it was just the old school farmer's market. The scene where Scully is, he's gone shopping and he's at this big outdoor parking lot, and his agent calls him and says, you've been fired from that vampire film. And they have an argument about that, and turns out the agent represents the new guy who got the role. That is the land where the Grove would end up being.
I remember that. That was this massive parking lot. There were a few older buildings that were part of the original farmer's market that were destroyed, and then there was some kind of a children's theme park, which was also there, and then maybe, let me try to think, maybe a nursery. This is a long time ago. It was this massive parking lot. I also do remember that area was actually somewhat seedy, because there was this rundown old Kmart, and now it's a Whole Foods. That area's become a lot more upscale, but yeah, I definitely remember that. And the Rodeo Collection is, it's one of my favorite places in L.A., and Matt and I actually filmed there for our documentary Supply, and
filmed in the elevator, too. I'll have to rewatch Body Double to see that elevator scene, because yeah, me and Robert did our own elevator scene at the Rodeo Collection.
Oh yeah. What was the line?
I don't know if David has seen it, so I don't know if it'll make sense, but said Robert Stark yearns for his long lost love, and we had him looking longingly out the elevator as it rose.
Yeah, maybe that connects more to another architectural landmark we can get to, but with the Rodeo Collection, there's just something really kind of archaeo-futuristic about it. It has, I mean, it's very futuristic and has all these, but also has kind of the feeling of like an ancient city with these like layers of bricks.
Yeah.
And,
it's quite compact, too.
Yeah, it's very compact.
Because there's some of these kind of Vegas-type aesthetics where it's a similar sort of, like you feel like you're going into like a different city kind of aesthetic. But they're much bigger, but the Rodeo Collection is really bite-sized. It's interesting.
Yeah, so yeah, there's that European, kind of faux European mall on Wilshire and Rodeo. And I mean, I can kind of appreciate that, but it's just kind of trying to copy an aesthetic that already exists. What I really appreciate about the Rodeo Collection is there's just something so unique about it. It's not copying something, it's just creating something really innovative and remarkable. And yeah. I didn't say this. I think we cut the line out of the documentary, but I was just kind of just walking around there. I was thinking, like, they should actually build entire cities like that.
You know, that's a really good point. And a lot of people who walk down Rodeo, tourists who don't know the area, they don't even necessarily know that they're walking past a mall because there's not some grand entrance to it. You kind of have to slip in through one of the openings. When I was walking around there with Ann Coulter earlier this year, she didn't know that right beyond that building was this beautiful multi-story mall.
Yeah, it's almost like it's hidden, which is weird, but there's a beauty to that.
Yeah, that's what makes it a really magical place, and it does kind of remind me of, I mean, places in Europe where you go for these courtyards and small walkways, and just this kind of a sense of exploration. But a lot of people, they're just walking very fast, and they're just thinking about getting to the next shop, and they don't notice. And it's also, I don't know how they're doing economically, because it had the feeling that it was fairly vacant. And there's another smaller mall that's like a courtyard in Beverly Hills that it feels very 80s, but I'm not sure the name of that. But Matt, you remember the one with the fountain?
Oh yeah, that smaller one. I don't even know if that was a mall, but it was a similar sort of structure as Rodeo Collection. It was kind of hidden amidst all the stores. But you go in, and it's a really pretty fountain.
Are you referring to the little courtyard area outside the Montage Hotel that is in between Cannon and Beverly?
I'm not sure. I do know about the Montage Hotel, which actually replaced that building that kind of looked like the Taj Mahal a while back.
Yeah, it was a bank. Yeah,
right.
Like the Bank of Israel, I think, or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
When they put up the Montage, which has several really nice restaurants in it, they also put in that little courtyard area that has a fountain and has lots of outdoor seating, and you can cut through it to get from Beverly to Cannon or vice versa. And it's become a real hot celebrity hangout. The restaurant there, Giorgi, is a place where I've gone there dozens of times, and half the time I saw Bieber there. Justin Bieber, I saw, strange sight, John Cena sitting by himself nibbling on some bread. I figured, well, maybe he's waiting for someone, but no, just John Cena just sitting there doing that shtick that all those muscle guys do where they buy a shirt that's a little too small so that they can look like they're busting out of it. And they're not fooling anyone, but he's just sitting there in his busting out shirt nibbling on bread for like a half hour. Then he leaves. There's no point to this story beyond that guy.
No, yeah, I think it's a point in and of
That's
itself.
Funny.
Yeah,
yeah, I have checked out that courtyard at the Montage, which is fairly new. I'm thinking of a place that looks more 80s, but I can't think of the name.
Yeah, the place that we were at, I mean, it was really small, and there was like a sculpture. I don't know what it was.
I mean, it's pretty cool, but I wouldn't. It's not on par with the Rodeo Collection.
Oh, not nearly, but there's just a lot of interesting stuff along Rodeo Drive.
And then the Roman fountain with the Roman columns. I forget what that's called.
Yeah,
I don't know where that is either. There's a lot of interesting architecture and sculpture. And...
Well, the place with the Roman fountain, that looks really old. Like it could have been built maybe the 1930s. That's closer to the Beverly Hills City Hall.
Yeah,
and that's a fountain that definitely predates me, and I used to go there with my grandma and my mom, and that whole area, a lot of that stuff is much older than I am, so I grew up with it. It was just always very familiar to me because that was a walking place that my mom and I would go.
So we were talking about the closure of the West Side Pavilion, the renovation of Century City, and also the demolition and of the underground mall in Century City. And that's this kind of issue with historic preservation, is it would be really great to have the state step in and preserve a lot of these remarkable places. But then the tough dilemma is like the practical side. Like if they're not economically viable and people are not shopping there and they're just basically vacant, like what do you do? So ideally, I mean, I think ideally there should be some kind of collaboration so they preserve the aesthetics and come up with something new. So I would really like to see those places preserved through legislation. But it's also I also understand that it's tough to do if they're not viable and people aren't going there.
Yeah, I was gonna say the idea, or I don't even know if it's an idea or just a hope that you had about when they said they're turning. I guess the news is they're turning the West Side Pavilion into office space. A good compromise would be like keeping the atrium, but just making the rest of the space office space. I mean, I could see compromises like that. But another point I actually wanted to make is that obviously we're doing a podcast about these malls from the 80s and such, but it's I think actually appreciating such things aesthetically and like seriously. I mean, I think everyone would say like, oh, that's neat. But, like, really seriously investing in those aesthetics and, like, thinking of them as something worth preserving historically is still, like, a very niche interest. Like, most people don't really care at all about a lot of more modern-type stuff. It's not what they think of when they think of stuff that's worth preserving.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at the trends, so the big trend right now is preserving a mid-century modern, and I guess with Art Deco stuff is pretty well-preserved. For the most part. So mid-century modern is the big historic preservation battle. So when it comes to this architecture from the 80s, it's basically the attitude is that it's too new and not worth preserving.
Yeah, a lot of people actively dislike 80s aesthetics too. I don't know if that's something that will pass as they get further and further, if they're just something objectively less popular about them. But, I mean, just a lot of people I talk to are like, oh, it's all garish stuff, and even just malls as a medium. You don't hear a lot of people talking about shopping centers as worth preserving, but of course that is modern history.
Well, most of the people who are into all this vaporwave or retrowave genre online, and malls play major theme as a whole vaporwave genre, mall soft or mall wave, which shows images of 80s malls.
And yeah, I love those videos, yeah.
A lot of those people were, like, born in the 90s, and they don't even remember that.
A lot of people, and I know this actually applies directly to you, Robert, a lot of people really romanticize what they kind of are exposed to in their early childhood. I know you've actually shared some memories with me of some very early memories of yours of being in malls and certain elevators and stuff. There's a kind of magical quality to this. There's a magical quality to those memories, and I think...
The Beverly Center with the...
The Beverly Center, yeah, that's another really big... I've never been there, but that's really...
So, yeah, so it's a kind of a glass elevator with these really cool neon numbers for each floor, and, I mean, that's a really kind of a... Yeah, that was a really cool aesthetic.
Yeah, and you say that's kind of like one of your earliest memories, and I don't know, there's a magical quality to those memories, and we really start to appreciate those aesthetics. That's what's captured a lot in Vaporwave, I think, is these children of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, because there's a dreamlike quality to it.
Yeah, the quote-unquote hypnagogic quality.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Who's that guest?
Spear.
So, I think we touched upon the Beverly Center. So, David... You remember there was like this, the Beverly Center was opened up in the early 80s, but you remember the theme park that was there first?
Well, the Beverly Center is the most jarring in terms of what used to be there versus what's there now. In the 60s and 70s, all of that land next to Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and Cedars-Sinai wasn't built until the modern Cedars-Sinai that we know now, came about in the 70s primarily also. But
that's where I was born.
Well, I can say that I was born in the old Cedars of Lebanon Hospital. The before they built Cedars-Sinai and modernized it, there was a hospital called Cedars of Lebanon, which was in Los Feliz, Silver Lake area. when they built Cedars-Sinai, they sold off that old building. So I was born in Cedars of Lebanon on Sunset Boulevard near Vermont, and I was born there in 1968. When they sold that building, it was bought by the Scientologists, and that is now the major, that huge Scientology compound on Sunset. So before Cedars-Sinai, we had Cedars of Lebanon and much further east, and all the Jewish doctors and everybody wanted to be in Beverly Hills. So that's why they created Cedars-Sinai and closed and sold off the old building. But all that land next to Cedars-Sinai, that is now the Beverly Center, and the Beverly Connection next to it, that was all flat land. And what existed there on one side of La Cienega was pony rides, just dirt, just like you would see somewhere out in Calabasas or something, where kids could go and ride ponies and ride horses. And that's all it was. It was just a fenced-in area. You had an amusement park that we all used to refer to as Kiddyland, although it actually went by a couple of other names, but Kiddyland is what we all kind of knew it as. And Kiddyland had a roller coaster, very mild one for little kids, not like you'd see it at a theme park today. Had a roller coaster, a haunted house, a merry-go-round, bumper cars, a bunch of carny rides, basically just some really cool carnival rides. And that's where I had my fourth and fifth birthday parties there. And it was just an amazing thing in the middle of Beverly Hills to have pony rides and an amusement park. But then towards the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, that land became so valuable. You couldn't have ponies crapping all over it at that point. So developers purchased it, and you got what became the Beverly Center, which I think opened in either 82 or 83, but that year I'm not 100% sure on, but it was definitely early 80s, 82 or 83, and that's when, at that time, that was the Beverly Hills Mall. That was the one that was fancy. That was the one where you didn't go to just kind of hang out and eat cheap food. The Beverly Center was the one that had, for that time, that period, had all the really expensive stores.
Oh yeah, so the old aesthetic of the Beverly Center, it was this large, kind of like this kind of giant like concrete spaceship, and then there were these external escalators that had these cool neon light. So it was a really interesting kind of a futuristic aesthetic. Do you remember how would you describe the interior of the original Beverly Center?
Well, I mean, it was an interesting shaped building, kind of getting back to the shape. It had a kind of L shape anchored on both ends by a different department store, Bloomingdale's on one end and Macy's on the other. And then in the middle, you had an elevator that could take you up and down. It was a three-story mall. The food court was located at the top. There was nothing much to it. It was actually a very dull food court. Cause like I said, it's not a place where people really went to eat. It wasn't until the 90s that they started to put restaurants, real restaurants, down on the street level, access lowest level. But inside, one of the things that would always stand out about the Beverly Center is that it was several stories removed from the ground. In other words, the first level of the mall was already about four stories up because you had parking structures and things like that. So, but it took a lot to get in the mall. You couldn't just walk in. You know, the West Side Pavilion, you could just walk in. Century City, Fox Hills, you could just walk in there. There was an entrance from the street. But the Beverly Center, you had to park or take one of those outdoor escalators from the ground level. So it wasn't user-friendly, but then again, it catered to people who loved driving their fancy cars. And so it didn't really cater to foot traffic at all, and it never really needed foot traffic. And then over the years, they just started adding bits and pieces in that the middle join of the L section. They put in a bar, it's kind of a fancy bar, and they improved the food court. They put an outdoor dining area next to the food court on the roof, and lots of really good restaurants on that lowest level.
They've renovated it a couple times, probably like twice in the 90s, and then again recently, and it looks pretty bland now. I've driven by it, and Matt and I drove by it when we were making our dock to West Hollywood, but I think the last time I've actually been inside there was maybe like the late 90s, so I can't really comment on what it's like inside now. I do know with those external escalators, they were really cool and futuristic, and what's there now is not that interesting, but I heard there was some issue with they were seismically unsafe.
That could be. The last time I was there, there was at the period, not to go back to the porn girl again, but the period when she moved out here and I began showing her everything in L.A. because she knew nothing about Los Angeles at all. So I was very excited to take her to the Beverly Center, if only because a couple of my favorite restaurants were on the ground level there. So we park, because like I said, you can't walk in from the street that easily. So we park, and I realized that, and this would have been June of 2016. So we're walking around inside, and I realize, oh my God, this is not just being renovated. This is being, I don't want to say gutted, but it's a mess. Half the stores were closed for remodeling. Westfield seemed to be almost hard to, like, putting in a third row of stores in the on the levels, you know, where people walk between stores, and they seemed to be like cramming. It was in my mind, it was looking like one of those godforsaken Asian malls that you sometimes see in like Hong Kong or South Korea cinema, where all these people are packed in and the stores are so jam packed. And I'm thinking of a movie called it was a zombie film. Forget the name of it, but Biohazard Zombies, something like that. Anyway, it was starting to look like that mall. And I went to the concierge desk because you couldn't – it was impassable. There were parts of it that were made impassable by the construction. So I went to the concierge desk and asked how we could get down to the restaurant level. And she's like, oh, no more restaurants here. No, they're all gone.
Oh, wow.
So once they took out all the restaurants and the mall itself – became impassable with the construction, I never went back. I never had a reason to go back. I think they may be done finally after 2 years with the construction, and I would be interested, just as a local historian, to see what they've done with it. But in summer of 2016, it looked like a war zone, and it didn't look terribly good what Westfield was doing there, because they weren't expanding. They were just cramming shit.
Yeah, it seems to be that any project that is involved with Westfield just has really poor aesthetic standards.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely agreed. It looked like it was going to be terrible. And if I'm in that area again at any point, I'll probably check in and see it. But again, it's not just that it's not foot traffic friendly, but also it's in a part of Beverly Hills that is a nightmare traffic wise. I hate driving up La Cienega around 3rd and around Beverly. I had to do that during the period when my mom was dying, and she was in Cedar Sinai a lot, and I always had to go there, and the traffic in that area is just horrific. I don't like going there. Maybe because it reminds me of Cedar Sinai, but once I saw with my porn ward that they were kind of messing it up, I just didn't have any desire to go back.
There's this hotel down on Pico and Beverwill, just south of Beverly Hills. It used to be called the Renaissance. I forget what it's called now. It's a kind of a very 70s looking hotel, and Matt and I filmed there to relive my adolescent trauma.
Yeah, it is now called Mr. C's, and Mr. C's is a very pricey boutique hotel chain. There's one in Tokyo, one in San Francisco, one in New York, and I believe one in Paris. They're named after the Cipriani family, the Cipriani's, hence the C. Their claim to fame is that they're the family that invented the Bellini. So if you've ever had a Bellini, I actually don't know, Robert, if you're a drinker or not. I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
No, I'm not a big drinker.
Yeah, well, your loss. The more for the rest of us, then, and Lord knows I'm going to need it. But the Bellini is kind of an orangey-flavored drink with vodka, almost like a screwdriver, but a little different. And so Mr. C's prettied that place up like crazy. If you haven't seen it since it became Mr. C's, you would not recognize any of it.
We were just there. We were up in the penthouse suite, like, surveying our fiefdom.
So you've been there since it's been Mr. C's?
I've been to both. So, I mean, I originally went to the original one, so I was invited to a bar mitzvah there when I was in ninth grade back in, like, 2000. So I remember the original one, the original penthouse suite, but the original one, you had this entire view of the whole city. The way the penthouse is now, it's just on one side, so you can only look north. I actually prefer the older one because I have a preference for 70s architecture. Mm-hmm. And I remember the external glass elevator. I don't know if that's still there. I think the last time we checked, it was just a regular glass elevator.
I mean, I think when we were there, you could kind of see where the external glass elevator had been, but I don't think it was accessible. Or maybe you could even see the elevator, but it wasn't accessible.
Or
but
possibly, you're telling me, yeah, possibly it's there, but it's private for guests only.
I think that's what it is. It's probably, but I mean, you're talking about your story where you were going up that elevator and you saw your crush at the age of like 13,
something like that, and inspired a scene in a book. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Well, I never liked the old one primarily because since I stayed there when I was a kid, I stayed there a long time ago in the 70s when my parents were having our house fumigated for termites and we had to get out for like 3 days. So we got just a regular room there, and that maybe would have been 1979. So a long, long time ago. But the way it was in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Was it built in the 70s?
Well, I know it was always there from the time I remember being in this area, so it would have to have been there from 74 onwards. I mean, I lived somewhere different for like the first 4 years of my life.
So basically, you grew up in Beverly Hills or further south?
Yeah, I mean, I was born and raised for the first couple of years in Beverly Hills proper. And then much of the rest of my life in Cheviot Hills, which is not going to be terribly familiar to some of your readers, but listeners. But Cheviot Hills is a house only area. There's no restaurants. There's no businesses. There's a park, a very big park. But Cheviot Hills is just a place with very nice homes, and it is right there. It's got Century City on one side of it, and it's got the shopping district at Beverly Hills on the other side of it. So it's basically, you know, think of it kind of as a suburb, a housing suburb of Beverly Hills and
Century City.
So kind
of, is it
City.
Kind of near where the Fox Studios are?
Oh, yeah, Motor. I mean, I'm not on Motor, and but Motor Avenue, where it goes south from Fox, and you've got the tennis courts, the dueling country clubs. On one side is the Jewish country club, and on the other side is the formerly No Jews Allowed country club. Not anymore, of course, but so you go down Motor with the park and the tennis courts, and that's Cheviot Hills, right? There are all those homes and those kind of hilly streets and neighborhoods with all those big houses. So that's Cheviot Hills. And but that meant, that kind of put me as a kid, that put me right there with Century City and with the Beverly Hills shopping district as the closest things to me. So that those were the areas that I would always spend my youth in, especially with my mom going shopping or doing things like that. This is the area that is like the back of my hand for me. Anything that is in the west side like Beverly Hills, Century City, or Westwood Village. I mean, this is just what I grew up going. I may be an L.A. native, but I'll tell you, Robert, the Valley I don't bother with, and I can get as lost in the Valley as a foreigner from Lithuania. I always try to stay away from the Valley. I don't like the Valley. And I meet these people, friends I have now, who grew up in the Valley, and they're like, oh, do you remember back in 1971 in Burbank, where that place – I never went to Burbank. I never went to Burbank. I never went to Studio City. I certainly never went to Northridge or, you know, further north like that. I didn't ever want to go out there. It was too hot for me. And the drive just never seemed to make sense. All my high school friends and junior high school friends were out here. So the Valley is foreign territory to me. I saw places when I had to go certain places with the porn girl, because there's so much porn stuff out there in the Valley. I was going to places I'd never been before. I'm in late 40s, and I was going to places in the technically the city of L.A. that I'd never seen before.
I know the Valley pretty well, actually. It's always funny to even think that it's the same city, because I mean as the rest of LA, because it's very much its own entity.
And in fact, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you keep going. Keep going.
To wind back to malls, during the Valley Girl period in the 80s, when everyone, the song and the movie and everyone's talking about Valley Girls, and everyone was always talking about those Valley malls. I never went to those malls. All those Valley Girl malls that you would see in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, look, the Sherman Oaks Gallery.
Yeah. I didn't go there. I never went there. So when people would talk about Valley Girl stuff and about, hey, do you ever go out, you know, to that mall from Fast Times? No, I never do. So it was never a friendly territory to me. I never cared for it. I'm a West Side creature. I'm a creature of the West Side. And even when I've traveled, back when I was doing revisionism full-time and I was traveling to Europe a lot, but this has always been my base and pretty much always will be. I was born around here, and around here is where I shall die.
Yeah, same here. So basically, as like a kid from about age 5 to 13... I lived in Westwood area near kind of Santa Monica and Westwood Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And then from about 13 to about 20, I lived near Sunset in the 405. So yeah, I'm basically the West Side most of my life as well.
But you probably are too young to have seen Westwood Village in its prime.
Let's see. I remember it from like maybe the earliest would be probably the early 90s.
Sorry, my landline's ringing. I apologize for that. Westwood Village in its prime, you would have pretty much had to have seen it around 1982 to 86, when it was packed shoulder to shoulder with people every weekend night. And it was where you went to get dates. And basically, when my friends, we were in 10th grade, and we wanted to go hang out.
Well, it's still basically a college town.
Yeah, but if you'll notice, first of all, there's almost no bars left. There's the Barney's Beanery that opened in, I think, 2010. So there's the Barney's Beanery, which is a sports bar, of course, and they're big for the jocks to go there and see whatever sporting events. But there used to be a bar on every block, and Westwood Village is incredibly bereft of drinking establishments right now. Yeah, they got a Whole Foods or a Bristol Farms. They got some very nice restaurants. They've still got the movie theaters that they always had. But it used to be a drinking place. And it isn't anymore. Maybe that's part of trying to make sure that the seedy people don't come back, or maybe it has something to do with not encouraging drinking at UCLA. I don't know, but it's just not a place where you can go and find a nice little dive and have a drink. And there always used to be all these really good bars there.
I guess one more place I'd like to touch upon is the Universal City Walk. That was opened up in the early 90s by the architect John Girardi, who did West Side Pavilion. I mean, that's kind of an interesting place because it's tucked away in the hills with next to the theme park, Universal Studios. But it's a very I mean, very kind of a futuristic, and lots of cool neon signage, and but most, I mean, most of the people who go there, they're either tourists from the Midwest or a lot of kind of lower class people from the poorer parts of the valley. But there's like a lot. If you're really into like neon signs and that kind of aesthetic, I'd recommend going there.
No, I was just very, very agreed. I mean, most of the people who go there are going to the theme park, because if people only know Universal Studios as a theme park, the one out here in Universal City, L.A., in between L.A. and the Valley, they built City Walk as an addition to the theme park. But unlike the theme park, you don't have to buy a ticket. You do have to find a place to park, and that's expensive. Or you can take – there's a train station, a subway station down below, and you have to take a tram up. But it's an outdoor mall eating fun stores kind of area that is adjoining the theme park, the Universal theme park.
David, you were telling me a funny joke about the Rainforest Cafe at the City Walk, and this idea that you had about the Tunnel of Hate at the Museum of Tolerance.
Yeah, to recap a bit, two things opened up the same year. I think City Walk and Wiesenthal Center, the Simon Wiesenthal Center Museum of Tolerance, both opened up the same year in the early 90s. Now, the Wiesenthal Center, they don't have this anymore. I mean, the museum got rid of this exhibit because...
Well, I think even South Park did a parody of it.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone was making fun of it because it was so ridiculous. The Museum of Tolerance is 90% a Holocaust museum, but there's 10%. The very first floor is about tolerance, where you're supposed to learn how to be tolerant for all races, creeds, and colors, and ethnicities, etc. So one of the exhibits they had when they first opened up was called the Tunnel of Hate. And it was just a dark tunnel, and you would walk through it, and this is what you would hear. Nigger, spick, kike, cunt, fag, wop, greaser. And then you would come out the other end, and you were supposed to have learned something. You were supposed to be enlightened now for some odd reason. And when City Walk opened up the same year, they had one of their original restaurants. It's not there anymore. It was called the Rainforest Cafe. And part of that gimmick was there was a tunnel of the rainforest. You would walk through it would say, walk through here to experience the beauty and the majesty of the rainforest. And you would walk in and you would get sprayed with a humid mist. And there'd be the smell of tropical flowers. And you'd hear birds, you know, and toucans and macaws and monkeys are chattering. And you'd come out the other side and you're like, oh, wow, that's a great rainforest. And I could never stop wishing that I could find a way to switch the audio so that I could take the audio from the Tunnel of Hate and put it in the Tunnel of the Rainforest so that people, like these tourists, these rubes, would see, oh, honey, it says walk through here to experience the majesty of the rainforest. Nigger, fucking faggot, kike, shithead, cracker. And then you come out the other side, you're like, well, no wonder they're clear-cutting these things. I mean, this is the rudest place I've ever been. I hate the rainforest now. The rainforest ought to die. I hate that place. I never found a way, and now both things are gone. The Rainforest Cafe is gone, and the Tunnel of Hate is gone. But boy, that just would have been the best prank ever. If there were YouTube channel pranks in 1993, I would have tried to do that. Just even if I got arrested, it would have been worth it.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank David Cole for being on. Brings back a lot of memories.
I appreciate you having me on, Robert. It is always a great pleasure.
And also, thanks, Matt Pegas.
Certainly.